Marie Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
Welcome to Trending. I have news this week. It is something we've not really been discussing, but we saw coming. Don has some exciting changes coming up in his life. And this is his last two shows, with us this week.
Exciting is one way to put it. It is exciting, Timmery. It's also sort of a pain in the bottom, I'll be honest.
We were talking about language a second ago off air.
Oh, it is big changes. You know, we're Southern California folks. I've been here about 25 years. I love California. And just recently, the house that we have lived in for the last 10 of those years, great house, lovely neighborhood near the beach. We've been getting a great deal and the owners are selling it. And that, as has happened with so many of my friends, frankly, has priced us out of the market. And so, you know what? A door opened up for us to move to Oregon near my wife's family. And so, yeah, it'll be good. I mean, it'll be good. It'll be sad to leave our friends here and the show and all of that. But I'll still join you occasionally via video, Timmery. Timmery's going to carry on trending. And so never fear, the content will still be there. And I'll be here occasionally. But in the meantime, yeah, next week, my family and I are packing up and head north.
And you know what? I think this is a good testament because I think life, all of a sudden, we're in this boat and it just starts shaking and you see it shaking. And then all of a sudden, you're like on the verge of falling into that water. And I see that in a lot of ways that these changes, like they've shaken up your comfort in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I mean, I was actually just preaching on this last night at an event and I didn't really plan it out like this, but I was talking about life in the wilderness, right? Like crossing the wilderness towards the promised land. That's really what life is about. And you know what God does with folks in the wilderness? He doesn't make them comfortable. In fact, he gets kind of angry when they're, you know, complaining about discomforts and this sort of thing. Like discomfort is actually what's to be expected in our life. And when we don't accept it, And I'm not saying I've been perfect on this, but believe me, there's been a lot of wailing,
Lord,
and gnashing of teeth. But there is a part of life where you just like, you know what? God throws these things at you and you just roll with them. Mm-hmm. And he's in the boat with you. It'll be all right, but you got to roll with them and not get too comfortable or complacent or all of those things. And yeah, all right, fair enough, God. I guess we'll do whatever.
But take this biblically. He also invites you outside of the boat.
Yeah.
He invites you to step out onto the water and trust him. And I think that that's something I have had so much respect for you through, like, I mean, really kind of some last minute changes in life where you have been walking along the way and you've been pretty calm. Like, yeah, it's been frustrating, but you're going, okay, Lord.
Yeah.
I see this is some serious suffering at moments, but I'm here with you. And I know that while doors are closing, others are opening up.
Yeah, that has been, I mean, I'm not saying the calmness, but I think my life has been filled with a lot of things where God says, you know what, I'm going to call you here and you don't really know how it's all going to work out, but I want you to take a step of faith. And so, yeah, I'm sort of expectant of that, Brian. It doesn't make it any easier, I'll be honest. But yeah, you do have to sort of, in fact, there's a danger. I feel like there is a danger when God offers you something and you say, no, mm-hmm. I can't take that step. Like Oregon, I'll be honest, I hate the rain. You know, I just don't like it. But what am I going to say to God? I'm like, sorry, no, I don't go where there's rain. He's like, oh, really? Oh, really? You know, like, welcome to the, you know, like, you don't do that to God. You don't say, okay. You know, as a youngster, one of the things within my church community was, you know, people would go be missionaries to Africa. And the joke was, never tell God you're not going to be a missionary to Africa because that's where he's going to send you, right? Like, so you say, okay, God, I'll go wherever. And, you know, it was sort of joking at the time. And I had actually a lot of friends who went as missionaries. But anyway, yeah, you don't ever tell God, no, I'm not going going to do that.
No, it's a big mistake.
No, big mistake.
Big mistake. Yeah. I can tell you firsthand, I remember always saying I was very involved in the pro-life movement, grew up in it. And I remember early on in high school going, okay, Lord, I will do just about anything. Like, I'm uncomfortable speaking in front of people about abortion. I can do it. I can do this. But Lord, I'm never going to write or talk about chastity. It's just a topic. Like, no, thank you. It's about abortion. We need to end abortion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And just that topic, it's uncomfortable. Little did I expect me saying no would be part of the reason I think our Lord calls us to certain things, is when we have kind of almost a repulsion to something that God goes, it's because of that I'm going to challenge you to get uncomfortable.
Well, yeah. I mean, and you think about it, are you really in a position to tell God no? That probably exposes you. What that does is expose you to an area where you need work on. I did the same thing, Timmy. My dad is a pastor growing up, you know, and I'm like, you know, I'll do a lot of things, but I don't want to be that preacher guy. There you go. God's like, ha, ha, good one. Good.
He's going to use both the pride and the humility that are in those statements and bring about some good from them.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, Timmy will carry on, and I'll join you occasionally and give you updates and all that stuff. So, you know, keep subscribed to the podcast. It'll still be getting content and all that. But yeah, this week will be my last, but
it will be your last
run.
Right. And so prayers for Don on his journey, especially moving all the way to Oregon. And just, it's not easy having teenage kids who are having to move. What's that like?
Well, yeah, I mean, crazy. Okay. So I do have to share a quick story you're not supposed to talk about, but, we knew that my kids, I mean, the younger one's a little bit more flexible. We knew, I mean, this is hard for a 16-year-old girl, for example.
Oh, gosh.
And it was to the point where that was like our major sticking point, really. Oh. It was like, no, you know, as adults, we're okay. Yeah, I mean, it's not our first choice, but we can do it. But man, our daughter, I mean, that's a killer, right? But she, I mean, it's just been a miracle. She has been fantastic. I mean, obviously, it's hard for her, but she's... you know, like, okay, we're going to go. And, you know, as soon as I'm 18, I'll come back here. But fair enough. You know what? Fair. I get that. I would have said the same thing.
But you're probably in your mind thinking, I would love to come back too.
Yeah,
this has been your home for 25 years.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, driving around today in the sunshine. See, the thing is, I've lived in Oregon before. That's the other thing.
Oh,
like, it's not like I'm a surprise at all the rain. I do think I have a little bit different mindset this time, hopefully.
Here we are in the desert of no rain.
We've had
maybe two small rainstorms in Southern California since the beginning of the year. Last year we came out of our drought. And so now here you are going into just like the pouring abyss of water. And I just keep thinking, Don, you mentioned, you know, in the desert, 40, you know, those 40 years as Moses led the Israelites in. And it's a reminder that we are pilgrims, always in a strange place when we are here on earth, and that even that rain and the discomfort of the rain is a symbol of like, we're not made to be here.
Yeah, and this is a really, really good point, Timmy. So I remember actually the first time I moved to California, early 90s, and I loved it. I mean, it was, oh, this is the best, because I grew up in Canada. And you know what? I actually had to go back to Canada. It was like, couldn't pay the bills or whatever, and things didn't work out with the visa. So off I go, and I was like, I am in exile here. This is crazy. I was just longing to go back. And, you know, God brought me back, obviously. But over the years, I've realized that those exile times, like you just said, it's not just that you have small periods of exile, which we kind of do, right? Maybe you're in a situation right now that God will bring you out of. And, you know, who knows how long we'll be in Oregon, whatever. But really, all of life is a little bit of exile, right? Like, mm-hmm. You're actually not meant to get too comfortable here. And so that is sort of the Africa thing or the Oregon thing. Like, God's like, no, this is not actually your home. You will not be completely comfortable until we have the beatific vision and you get to live forever with me in heaven. Then you'll be comfortable. Until then, no, don't get to you know, thinking like, all right, I've got to have no trouble. I've got to be just completely comfortable. I've got to love the weather every day. No, I mean, you just have to accept that this is the wilderness journey. This is the desert.
And this is such a practical lesson for all of us, whether you are a parent of a family that's making a move, whether you're, you know, a young adult transitioning between college, high school, whatever it might be, or maybe you're a young adult and you just feel isolated. You're not in the place where you wish you were right now. You know, you wish maybe that you were married, that you had children, that you had more friends, whatever it might be. It's this reminder that our Lord is calling us first and foremost to Him. And that's where I was even thinking about the readings this morning and as we prepare for Lent, but James and the conversation about what is sin. And sin is essentially us acting on our desires that are essentially desires that are disoriented. They're not oriented toward God. And, you know, I think sometimes when we have our lives are being uprooted, whether good or bad, that we have to recheck in with our desires and what's the number one desire that directs everything else.
This, again, to go back to that first sort of like serious exile moment I had when I was a young adult, you know, and I'm back in Canada, I'm just so sad at my situation. I'm like, oh God, this is terrible, you know? And he didn't change that until I reached a point where I said, you know what? Actually, I don't need California. I don't need the sunshine. I could actually be, to a certain extent, maybe not fully, but to a certain extent, content as long as you are with me here. Mm-hmm. And it's not until we sort of get that. Like, ultimately, if you can't be content with God in your current situation, and I'm not downplaying your current situation, right? Like, it could legitimately be problematic and you're going to need to get out of it. But ultimately, you can't look to your circumstances. You can't look to that future thing like, okay, if I just have that, I'll be happy. If I'm just married, if I'm just have the kid, if I just get my degree, none of those things actually is going to make you happy. I'm not saying don't pursue those things, but mm-hmm. ultimately, you have to figure out how to be content with where God has you right now and your relationship with him, or you're never going to be. I mean, it doesn't matter what your situation changes if you actually can't find victory right now where you are.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So last night, Timmery, my wife and I are supposed to be packing, and we reached a point where we actually labeled it last night. We're like, we've reached a packing paralysis. We couldn't even figure out, like, I don't even know what I should pack next. And so we just sat down and watched some Olympics. And
excellent.
The Olympics, I don't know. I love the Olympics, but I do find myself watching the Olympics like, what am I watching here? Like, am I really watching biathlon right now? And I'm a guy who grew up in Canada with actually all of, you know, you could actually go and do biathlon if you wanted, but I'm like, this is amazing. There's no other point in the, you know, the calendar or the next 4 years that I'm going to sit down and watch biathlon, but here I am and I'm cheering. I'm like, yay.
Okay. And excuse my ignorance, but what is biathlon?
So biathlon is the cross-country skiing combined with shooting. And
that sounds very manly.
Oh no, I was watching the women's event. The women's event. Oh yeah. And so it's actually, I mean, you got to be a super athlete because cross country skiing is difficult. I remember doing it actually for PE, and I hated
it. You definitely grew up in Canada.
Oh yeah, I definitely grew up in Canada. It's hard. I mean, that's a workout. Anyway, you have to do that. Then you have to pause and regulate your heartbeat enough that you can hit 5 targets as they carry this rifle. And then they pull a rifle up.
That sounds a lot of fun.
It's the craziest thing. It actually, I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. I guess it's fun. I don't like to cross country ski, but here I am. It's fun to watch. And like curling, right? Have you ever curled?
I haven't curled myself.
Yeah. See, again, we used to do that in PE. Now curling, again, it's not something I'd sit down and watch generally, but Olympics time. Oh yeah. Let's watch some curling. Shuffleboard on ice.
I love seeing all the bobsledding. What's the other one where they're laying and they're
my
long?
My kids love the luge.
The luge.
Or the skeleton. Okay. Oh, the kids love it.
I haven't seen any yet. I hope there's still more to come, because if not, I'm totally going to have to watch the videos later on.
And the of course, the snowboarding was last night. And wow. Those guys, I mean, the athletic prowess is unbelievable. I mean, Sean White's up there doing
still
like
competing.
20.
This
not
is
only
third,
still competing,
third or
but
fourth?
He was, he's number one after the qualifying. So
okay, I heard that he
by
did
the
really
time
well.
You hear this, you'll probably know whether he got the gold, but the guy is fantastic. Yeah, he's in his 30s.
Yeah, I heard he was cleaning up house. Well, and of course, I love coming from a dance, and I skated for a number of years. Skating background.
Did you? I didn't know about the... All right, nice.
You know, I was competing in ice skating. I grew up at a world training center for ice skating.
In Arrowhead, there's a lot of Olympic athletes that have come out of that rink, right?
Michelle Kwan that was her home training center, and I had friends who went on to almost make it to the Olympics. I had a dear friend who was a pair skater, and him and his partner actually split up not long right before they were Olympic bound.
It was
devastating. He now performs for Disney on Ice, but I ended up stopping ice skating because just my body was not built for the impact of the jumps. Jumpers, ice skaters come down 10 times their weight when they land, and it's really hard on your knees. If you don't have the build and knees for it, it can be really dangerous. And so I had been well advised that I'd have a great and successful career for a very short period of time, not even making it out of high school and skating, or I could stick to dance. Yeah. And so I kept my heart in dance, and I'm so happy I did, because to this day I can still dance if I want to, and I can dedicate the time to it.
Yeah, smart.
But it was interesting this year, Olympics, what they did is they actually had not just the individual pairs, individual women and men ice skating, but they had group skating this year where they were competing in teams against each country. I'm just going to say, Russia, I really feel bad for those athletes from Russia that aren't able to compete under their flag. I get that their government was encouraging and pushing doping, but man, like, that's so sad for those athletes who are totally clean and they deserve to be
they're there though, right?
And they're the Olympic athletes of Russia.
They're still competing. At least they didn't get left home.
The OAR, they didn't get left home. Right, that's what's awesome. But man, Canada, Russia, USA, just like dominating with ice skating. And I will say I'm kind of disappointed in the women so far. Women's ice skating, there's a huge lack of performance Sunday night, but the pairs really brought the heat. Great performance.
I did not see it. I understand there's a lady from where my family lives actually now in Canada, from Sherwood Park, Alberta, who's one of the gold medal favorites, I think.
Awesome.
So I'll have to try to catch that. The Canadians, very good curlers, very good skaters. Hockey players. I don't know about all the rest of it.
I love, do you enjoy skating? I'm always curious to hear who does and doesn't enjoy the skating.
Like watching it?
Okay, I can already tell you do not like skating. That was great.
Well, I don't know. The figure skating thing. No, it was, admit it, growing up in Canada where you'd go and play hockey and the girls would skate. It's not that it wasn't, you know, enjoyable, but no, we would never go and, you know, unless your sister was in it or something. I don't know.
Unless your sister. Too girly for you, Don.
So, Yuna Kim, though, who's an excellent skater, this is really cool. Because we talked a lot about athletes. For instance, the Super Bowl, college football. A lot of athletes have come out very strong professions of faith, which is great. They're not always Catholic, though. Here we have an explicitly Catholic lady who is very outspoken about her love of Jesus and also love of Mary and the rosary and all this stuff. It's a pretty cool story, actually.
I love hearing this because this is a woman who converted to the Catholic faith, both her and her mom, back in 2008. And we've seen her competing in ice skating over the years. Now retired ice skater, no longer competing, but she was the one to be the last bearer of that Olympic torch and light the rings. She was actually, I guess, the advocate for bringing the Olympics to North Korea this time.
To South Korea.
South Korea.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that it's so neat because here you see a woman who is recognizing, I have a place where people see me and I can actually use this to promote my faith. And she has been using it to do great philanthropic work, donating to multiple charities and education systems, working to bring about more prayer and rosary. I think it's really neat to see a Catholic living her faith here.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. She teamed up with the Korean bishops for a national rosary campaign. She's been actually seen wearing a rosary ring, which people mistake for an engagement ring. I'm actually not familiar with the rosary ring. What does that do?
It is just a rosary ring. Well, if this is the one I've seen, it's just where you have the 10, like almost something like elevated that you can just flip the ring while you're praying your rosary.
Nice.
Similar to the bracelet, has it a single decade, so you can pray. Nice way to keep track. Another interesting thing about the Olympics, I remember a number of years back, I had some friends who actually went out to help minister to the Olympic athletes when they were there, because one of the major things behind any sport, and especially we see in the Olympics, and I saw this being in the dancer world, was the pressure for using hormonal contraception and condoms. Here are, you know, an elite group of people who have worked incredibly hard to achieve specific goals. And especially for women, there are some challenges if you're in your childbearing years. And it's interesting because we see some of the reports are just looking at CNN. Olympics Village stocked with 110,000 condoms ready to be given to the Olympic athletes.
110,000. No, I mean, that is really true, though. There's been several stories at every Olympics, it seems like, that, you know, you've got these young, virile athletes getting together. And you're right. They're not, in general, I would say, that your young Olympic athlete has made that first in their life. So it's not like they have kids. It's not like they have a family, because they've put those on the back burner for now so that they can. So they show up and it is, I'm trying to use them. Like sex central at some of these Olympic villages.
It is. It is very much so. And it's been interesting because I remember in the last, the Summer Olympics, and we talked a lot about this on with it Trent before when we had our show Hearts and Minds about how there were a number of athletes who, females who, okay, they ended up pregnant. They weren't able to join the Summer Olympics. There's one woman in particular, I'm not remembering her name. She trains a lot down in San Diego though. She was a runner. And she took this last Olympics off to have her child. And she said it was one of the greatest thing she decided. And I remember one of her mottos was something like this: mama runs, run mama run. Okay. Like, she can keep running. Just because she had a child doesn't mean that life completely ends. Like, she was trying to make it clear, like, yes, my life has changed because I have a child, but there are still things I can do, keeping in mind my child first.
Sure. And isn't it interesting, who was it, wasn't it the tennis star who had a kid and said, hey, this is awesome, now my life has meaning? And everybody was so upset. What? They're like, what? You can't say that. In fact, I was doing a little editing on my film just last night, and I have several little small clips of Hollywood stars who come out and say the same sort of thing. Like Richard Dreyfuss comes on, for example, and says, you know, when I had a kid, I didn't realize how much I loved myself. I didn't realize I could love anybody else. And you have these like major news reporters come on and say, you know what? I can't imagine not having a child. This has brought the same sort of thing, like purpose and meaning. And this is the best thing I've ever done. And you think, can they even say that? Like, you've been told your whole life, right, that having children is something that you really need to, like, that's down the road. That's like a little extra. Right. It's like a little add-on to life. First, you got to get the money and the career and the athletics and all this other. You do all that stuff. And then maybe if you have time, later have the kid. And they're realizing, whoa, wait, this is the best thing I ever did. Like, this is now this is what I was made for.
Right.
And you could see there's a sense of a little bit of a regret there. Like, it's not, you know, I don't think they're disappointed that they went and got the gold medal or whatever. But you know what? There is a great disappointment. In fact, 40% of women who have reached the end of their childbearing years in America wish they had more kids. I mean, that's a lot of women who say, you know what? Yeah, if I'd had to do it over again, I would have had kids younger. I would have had more kids. I wouldn't have wasted so much time before I tried to have kids. And now here I am. Maybe I've got one and I'm older. And it's like, no, I mean, let me just throw that out there. You know, if you're a young lady who are wondering, you know, what should I focus on in life? Please do not wait too long to consider starting a family.
Absolutely. Well, and this is something that's interesting because a lot of the athletes actually have adverse decision to not wanting to use hormonal contraception because it impacts their ability to perform. It impacts their health. And actually, the athletes recognize this. So then, what do they end up choosing? They end up choosing condoms, or some of them choose, I'm going to focus on my career right now and wait to have a family. Now, for some, that ends up being detrimental. But for others, you know, I think that there's a balance. We'll come back a little bit more with this.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
You know, back in 2014, there was a young woman by the name of Megan Henry. She was an Olympic-bound athlete and, in fact, had had a NuvaRing implanted to try and prevent her being able to get pregnant. And in the end, she ended up having some major, major blood clotting that prevented her from being able to compete in the Olympics. And she and her family have been one of many families speaking out now against the harms of hormonal contraception. But it just shows that not only can delaying children and using hormonal contraception impact your body in the here and now, but it can impact you later on from ever being able to have children. And I think this is something that not enough people are talking about.
Well, and it is sort of seen more clearly, I think, with Olympic athletes, where they're so focused on what's going to make my body perform optimally. Right? Right. Like, we understand what to eat and when to train and when to sleep and all these things. And then we're just going to throw these foreign man-made objects, you know, and chemicals into us. Really? Really? is that what we're going to do? Because that doesn't make a lot of sense. So, yeah, I think we are seeing a trend away from, and it's not even necessarily a religious trend, just like health-wise,
right?
We're seeing a trend away from some of these contraceptives, and yeah, so good.
That's something to be aware of for you in your life, and also you and just bringing these stories up to other people you know. Absolutely. You don't have to try and convert people and knocking them over the head. Just talk about what you're seeing in the culture and bring it up as discussion topics. You don't have to be the best. You can just ask questions or just see where people are at.
Well, and that's actually a good point. Like, the things that the Catholic Church prescribes and that God prescribes, let's just say, morally speaking, things like no contraception, it's not because that's some arbitrary rule that God made up just to make our life a hassle, right? Like, God's up there thinking, oh, what shall I do? What hoop shall I make them jump through, you know, so that I can laugh when they fail or whatever? No, it's what's going to provide you the optimal life? Like, what's the most healthy? What's the best for you? What's going to cause you to flourish? Those are why we have those rules. And so things like no contraception, you can be sure that those are going to be the most healthy. Like, God doesn't just make up stuff. It's what's best for you. All right, let's move on. Timory, it's Lent coming up, Ash Wednesday tomorrow as we record this. And you don't always give things up. Sometimes you add things to your life, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I like to add things. You know, I think that Lent, in my mindset, always looking at Lent, it's an opportunity. Like, if we're giving something up, it's usually, like, it should be replaced with something most of the time. Like, if I'm giving up all of this junk food, maybe I should eat healthy, or maybe I should spend a lot less money on junk food and maybe donate that money, you know, different things like that. And I think that the big idea in Lent is we're called to follow the church's prescribed ideas of fasting and penance during Lent. And with that, you know, we have the opportunity to grow in our faith. Like, Jesus went into that desert for 40 years. It's what prepared him for his public ministry. In the desert, he was tempted. We talked at the beginning of the show about, like, what are your desires? Today's reading, the last reading before Lent starts, talks about sin, James chapter 1, and how sin is us acting on our desires, but desires that aren't ordered to God, aren't ordered to true nature of how God has created us. And so I'm going to be publishing it for those listening live. I'm publishing it later this afternoon, but I'm challenging you guys to the black and white challenge. And that is basically take your phone, turn the screen settings into black and white. For a number of reasons. One, if you turn the phone screen settings into black and white, it changes the dopamine levels that we're receiving when we are looking at a screen and being stimulated by notifications and just by the glow. A lot of people call the millennial generation the glow kids because we're obsessed with the dopamine. That's the pleasure type of chemical released in our brain. And so changing your phone to that black and white will help you in beginning to step away from this total pleasure-oriented idea of the screen. It's going to offer you the opportunity to recognize, like, I'm looking at my phone and this is dissatisfying. I remember, I think I talked about this on the show a while back, Don. It's been about 6 months. I've had my phone screen on black and white ever since then.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Unless necessary for whatever work purposes. First week, every time I picked up my phone, I think, this is so dissatisfying. Literally were <That's> my words out of my mouth. And what I came to realize is there was a little bit more of a sense of self-control with how I then used my basically social media apps, texting, etc. And it allowed for the opportunity to enter into more silence. Like, I don't just have to pick up my phone when my hand's literally itching to pick up the phone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. You grab for it. You're like, well, I need something in my hand. It's like, I've only been a second and a half. This happened this morning to me, Timory. Oh, I was helping my daughter with some homework, and she had to go run and get a book or something, and she was literally gone like 15 seconds. And when between the time she went, I actually caught myself. I'm like, she's literally going to be back in 15 seconds. Why am I going to check this? So I put, I'm like, caught myself. No, you're absolutely right.
Isn't that funny? And so one of the things that I've realized, though, is that the importance of savoring things. So the idea of self-control, but savoring things. I think that when we're able to step away from our phones, like, we can really appreciate a conversation we just had with someone. And instead of just jumping to the next thing, whether you're driving in the car, walking to your car, whatever you might be doing, or maybe you're home that evening folding laundry or, you know, getting ready for the next day, whatever it might be, instead of just hopping right into your phone, watching a TV show, savor what you just experienced. Savor maybe the mass readings that you heard today or the homily that you heard. I think because we become so distracted, and even if it is with good news content, with good prayerful inspiration, that inspiration on social media can only go so far if you don't have time to savor it. So it's self-control, savor, and then silence.
Nice.
That silence allows for that reflection.
Yeah, that's I love it. All of the points you made are fantastic. I like this, the savor one. Let's start with that. I noticed that I a lot of times will do my daily readings, the mass readings, on my phone. But the problem with that, and I know other, I've heard other people talk about this, is that when you do it on your phone, it's very easy that after you're done, okay, now I'm done. I'm going to check email or I'm going to check whatever, right? Twitter real quick. Whereas, no, you should be. And this is, you know, when I used my Bible as a hard copy, all right, you think for a minute, you sit, you're not immediately tempted to do that next thing. So that's excellent. The black and white thing, I love this too. This is huge. So like I said, I'm in the middle of editing this movie. We're almost done, but I actually use black and white in the film. And as a filmmaker, you really realize the power of changing certain scenes. And one of the scenes that I use, we did a silhouette because it's an anonymous interview. I just actually went and did, and the girl went through some traumatic stuff. What happened was, you've got B-roll, you know, a little bit behind it, right? B-roll is like your background footage when somebody's talking. Mm-hmm. And it was too jarring. You know, we did the silhouette and then you're trying to show something, but she's telling a very like sad story. It was too jarring. So we had to black and white and sort of granular all of the B-roll because the emotional impact was too much on you. And you're exactly right. Like, black and white is a huge difference. Watching color and watching black and white has a huge impact difference on you. And that's why filmmakers, that they'll use black and white and color differently for that reason. And so I love the black and white challenge. Let's do that.
Yeah. And I think that because there was a piece that you brought about to me about, do we give up our phones for Lent? Like, do we just give it up? And I think that in theory, I would love to get rid of all social media, get rid of my phone. Like, in theory, I would love that. I think that unfortunately, some of us just don't have the luxury of making that happen.
Yeah.
Or we do. And then I'm not a big fan of just indulging in stuff on Sundays during Lent. Totally different conversation. But, you know, at the end of Lent, we just obsessively sit here on social media, on our phones? Or have we learned a new practice of prayer? Have we learned a new sense of self-control?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know if it's to the point it's like almost like air now, which is a problem. But yeah, can you really give up your phone? Well, I mean, hopefully do it as much as possible, I would say. I like the black and white thing. I think that's a nice compromise position, maybe.
Right.
I don't know if you can't give it up completely. And not even a compromise. I think that's a really good idea, actually. Also, the whole fasting thing. So, you know, I'm still a relatively new Catholic, and the fasting thing is not something we did as Protestants. Although some are coming around, actually. Okay, so within the last year, I've really come to appreciate fasting, not because of my Catholicism, frankly. Here's how it came about, Timory. After you reach like 45, 46, I don't know what happens to male bodies, but they just like, the metabolism stops, and because it's not like I was completely sedentary, you know, you try to exercise, but I really had to adjust my eating habits this last year to avoid becoming like 400 pounds, okay? So I did. And here's the thing. I've really come to appreciate that those hunger pains you get. And in the past, they would drive me crazy. Like fasting days when you get hungry, I'm like, I can't do it. I can't handle it. I got to get a snack. How am I supposed to survive? You know? Well, here's the thing, because I know now, because all of these other things weren't working. You know, my usual exercise was not working and all this other stuff, and my knees didn't hold up, you know, similar type thing. And so I'm like, oh man, I don't know how I'm going to lose weight. And then I started doing just eating differently, where you'd have these periods where you actually do get hungry. It's kind of like a mini fast, but it worked. And I'm losing weight, and it's great. And so now my mindset is completely different, where like, oh, good, I've got some hunger pains. This means I'm losing weight right now. But I just think, you know what? God, like, that's those little pains, like, oh, well, I'm looking at my phone, and it's not satisfying. That you can actually turn that into a good thing. Oh, this means that I'm maybe becoming spiritually more mature if I can put down the phone, if I can go through the hunger pains and get to the other side and fast, you know, properly for a day. And so just having that little shift in mindset, realizing this is really good for me, it revolutionized my approach to like hunger pains. But I think hopefully it could revolutionize our approach to like phones or whatever it is that we're giving up for Lent. So,
and this is Catholic virtue. I mean, at its finest, that idea that, you know, you notice this because of your body, like we're a body and soul. And just because it wasn't vanity going, hey, I don't want to add some frumpy pounds. Like it was the idea of I need to be healthy to care for my family. And this temperance can enter into that.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. This is Trending with Dawn and Timmery on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
So I just got the latest copy of Radiant Magazine and Valiant Magazines for anyone watching on Facebook, social media, live. Check it out. These magazines are awesome. They are so inspiring. The layout of the magazine, and I have to add, the lack of junk in ads is so refreshing looking through these magazines, but they're inspiration for faith. They talk about mental illness, at least the woman's one, mental illness. They talk about, you know, prayer and growing in prayer, even has fun hairdos and styles for the ladies. Another thing, there's an article in the Hope edition, and it is Embracing Humility in a World of Envy. I think is such an important piece for us. If you're looking for something inspiring, I strongly recommend our Sunday visitors, Radiant and Valiant magazines. You can find them at radiant.osv.com or valiant.osv.com.
New Harvard research says U.S. Christianity is not shrinking, but growing stronger, according to an article at The Federalist. We actually talked a little bit about this study a few weeks ago, but we didn't complete the conversation. We wanted to come back to that. And I'll admit, Timmery, when I looked at the headline, I'm like, oh, really? Because it sure doesn't feel like Christianity's growing stronger.
I'm all alone.
Where exactly is it growing stronger? But they make several points. But one of them is that those people of strong faith, so it's not your nominal Christians, it's not those people that go to, you know, just Mass on Christmas and Easter or whatever, but those that are actually living it out, those people are not abandoning the faith. Like, we hear a lot about, you know, how many Catholics are leaving. I saw a stat yesterday, this is heartrending. For every one convert to Catholicism, six leave the church in America, which is like, wow. I mean, if that's true, that's terrible. But we know that we are sort of hemorrhaging people. So,
and while that's heartbreaking, I do have some good news there, that usually the converts are really strong in their faith. And they're inspired by these people who are fervent, who are praying throughout the day, who are attempting to go to church and maybe go to Mass daily, or dive deeper into what the church actually teaches, rather than living something and claiming the church teaches it, but it's totally inconsistent with a biblical traditional view.
Yeah, and I think kind of that's what this article is getting at, is that, all right, we have all these nominal believers, and maybe a lot of those folks have stopped calling themselves Catholics or whatever, and we get that. But the strong believers, those people are not shrinking. It's not like those folks are leaving the faith or abandoning Catholicism or anything. In fact, those people are growing stronger. And yeah, that makes sense to me. I get if that's, you know, sort of their take on it, like, well, we're not actually becoming weaker if you just look at the core. Numbers wise, you know, it'd be nice if we had more of those folks, I would say. But those folks are not leaving. And there's some particular reasons why they're not leaving. The primary of which is family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is something we've talked about a lot. Ultimately, family is what makes believers. Sometimes we think it's the other way around. Mary Eberstadt, I know this is one of my favorite books I've ever read. It's called How the West Really Lost God. Mm. Absolutely fascinating book. Changed the way, frankly, I approach ministry and was one of the impetuses for my new movie. So my new movie is about the sexual revolution and how it broke down families. Well, I'm an evangelist. You might think, well, why are you worried about that, Don? Shouldn't you be out evangelizing? No. Because the reason I make the movie is so that we can evangelize. You know why we're doing such a poor job of evangelizing? Families are breaking down. Mm-hmm. The key finding of this study and of Mary Eberstadt's work, by the way, is that religion, any religion, but Catholicism, let's just say, it follows strong families. It's not the other way around, right? So it's not like you go into a place and evangelize and then families grow up, although that can happen. Primarily, when you see religion in whatever culture leave, it's because first the family has disintegrated. Mm-hmm. So it's like first you have a sexual revolution, then religion goes away.
Right.
Because people primarily, we've actually got another story too about people who are leaving the church. Those that leave the church do so out of bad families, out of tough situations, out of bad relationships.
Lack of total formation. Yep. Like they weren't practicing their faith to begin with, so naturally they left.
Those that stay, regardless of what the culture does, this is what this Harvard thing is like the people who are calling them nuns, largely those are the people that have had the tough families. The people in the strong families, they stay strong. They mm-hmm. stay in the church. And so, you know, all of that to sort of to say, like, if you really want to ensure that the church stays strong, we got to keep the family strong.
Absolutely. Well, and what's neat, if you look at this, is that those people who are consistently living within the church, these are essentially families where you see hope in the fidelity to fertility, as this study was calling it. And the fact that these are people who are living faith and family-oriented lives, and they are having families, and they are raising excellent, God-fearing human beings. And that's where a lot of people say, oh my gosh, you know, everything's so difficult in the church. The persecution worldwide of Christians is at just an all-time low. And I look and I see all of these good, good people preparing to have families, wanting to have families down the road. And I see these are people who are truly raising incredible human beings that will change the culture. And I think that the problem is that this is almost an old version of evangelization that we forget, that it's changing within the culture that surrounds us rather than being a famous person on TV talking about, oh, hey, I'm Catholic, you know?
Yeah, well, and in fact, the hardcore secularists, they're a little bit worried about the demographics of this because they see that it's the strong religious believers that are having the big families, and the, you know, hardcore atheists or whatever, they generally don't have the big families if they have a family at all. And they look down the road and they're like, huh, all of those large families are going to eventually overtake us non-believers.
Because they're not having kids.
And you could look at it just demographically and say, yeah, all right, don't worry about the culture too much. If all of the big families are strong believers, you're going to be okay. But even beyond that, even beyond just the sheer numbers, the demographics, it is those strong believers, like you said, that will, whether or not you ever do change the culture, I mean, I agree with you that that will happen eventually, but whether or not you face persecution, whether or not, you know, you get the, you know, politicians that you want or any of that stuff, you've got to continue to build those strong families and build that strong community, and you'll be okay, right? Like that, your kids will be okay. You'll be okay. But that family structure has to go first. I'm always a little concerned when people dismiss the family stuff. You know, like, oh, you know, we can change the definition of marriage and this will attract more people to... No. No, you cannot.
Well, and this is what the Harvard research study showed, that it was when the teaching of true Christianity was misrepresented to water down the teaching on family, to water down the teaching on sexuality, to water down the teaching on the Eucharist and different things. This is why a lot of people have actually turned to, you know, a non-denominational evangelical type of faith, because they've been consistent a lot of the time on these major moral issues. And people are leaving when they see that inconsistency. And it's breaking my heart, because I see, unfortunately, there's a lot of attempt to say, this is what the church teaches. And it's actually not what the church teaches. So instead of saying, oh, the church teaches this, but I disagree with it, instead, they're teaching things in the name of the church that are not, it's just not consistent with the sexual moral ethic, the sacramental moral ethic, the salvific moral ethic, like how we're saved, even just the idea of how the sacraments work and heaven, hell, purgatory. There's just such a lack of proper understanding for this that I think has led to indifferentism, where people just think, well, it doesn't really matter what church you're in because they're all inconsistent.
Yeah, you're right. It's a pretty serious irony that those that have attempted to change the teachings of the church, and then unfortunately a lot of them present it as if it's the new teaching. You're right. It's one thing to be sort of like Protestant, like say, well, this is what I think. But it's another to say that's what the Catholic Church thinks. But the great irony is they present that, and then people don't want that anyway. It's not like you're going to fill up your, you know, liberal Catholic Church by presenting a different teaching than what the church actually teaches. People are not interested in going to those kind of places, except for maybe as a social club. But you know what? There's better social clubs out there. Like that's what happened with liberal Protestantism in America. Those churches are now empty. You can go to any downtown in any city in America. You'll find a huge, big building that used to be the main, you know, Methodist church or Presbyterian church or first whatever church.
They're now breweries.
They're breweries. They're pubs. They're, you know, whatever.
Right.
Nobody goes to those because they abandoned the classic historical teaching on the church, starting with the family, by the way.
Right.
It's those ones that first gave in on contraception and on divorce and all. You know what? If you want to look at the timeline, there are certain denominations that were the first to go on that. And they're also the first to be empty.
Well, and you even look at the Catholic churches, and the Catholic churches where they are consistently teaching what the Catholic Church has taught scripturally, in its tradition, in its documents for years, those pews are full. They have multiple masses. It is a zoo working through the parking lots to get out of there. And people end up staying to socialize because they're talking about hell. They're talking about sin, mortal sin. They're talking about amending your life in chastity and virtue. These are things that people are hungry for. I was reading an article, I think we're covering it on the next show, talking to your kids about sex.
Right.
And one of the things it talks about is like, your kids may not seem to be listening, but they are. And in the end, it may seem like they don't want rules, but actually in the end, they end up appreciating them. They desire that. And I think same thing with us. We are God's children, and he has a plan, a blueprint for human life that even all of psychology, social studies show that true human happiness lies in a consistent Christian ethic of faith and family. And when you see that, you recognize like this consistency, this desire for rules, even if we abandon them, if we can see the meaning behind them, and we need to explain this purpose, it changes how you live your life.
Absolutely. All right. Don't forget to go to timmery.com and invite her to speak and see all the rest of the stuff that she's doing. And DonJohnsonMinistries.org. And we will see you next time.
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Don and Timmery.
Trending.
To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or Timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.